Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Norm.
I'm Adam.
And Richard.
Richard Taylor, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to join you again.
Yes, and we've been here in Wellington now for just about a week.
Just about a week.
You've been here a little longer.
Yeah. We are here working on some projects, but also covering, and it feels like visiting family members.
Well, for the first time ever, we've got to hang out properly in the weekend,
yes.
Which has been nice. I was able to invite you out to play Trains, which I think was something that surprised you because you didn't know that was coming, and that was great fun.
Yeah, and it really exemplifies the feeling that we get coming here. It's the third time I visited Wellington, and I pulled up to the front gate here at Weta, and I was it's like I'm home. I'm with some family again. It feels like we're so welcomed, and it's so warm here in every department that we've been covering.
Great, and because of what is your core fascination, your love of making, and your love of giving to the world stories about how to make, that's the core of what we do here. Of course, I say to our team, it's all about what's at the end of your arms, these 10 digits, and what you can do with them. It's got to be about a love of making. And you know, arguably, I think that's what you feed off when you're here.
And I must say, I'm always gobsmacked by when we're hanging out and having a meal together and chatting, how calm you are, and yet how many varied and many armed this creature that is Weta is. And also, at the same time, I've worked in big effect shops where there was over 200 people working at once. And one of the things that typifies in the U.S., at least, was that there were often people who protected their fiefdoms in their section of the company. And if you drifted, you would find resistance. And I don't see any of that here. I see many, many tales of people matriculating from one department to the other, working here for a decade or two decades and working in different departments.
Yeah, I can't comment on what happens to it in anywhere else because I've not got experience of that. But here, we cover 11 different departments. That is born out of necessity to stay in business,
right,
by diversification, but it's also born out of a love of mine to just give everything a go and a love of our team to feel a sense of responsibility for lots of different creative areas and exploration into those creative areas. So that means it's a prerequisite that you can't come armed with an ego.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to be egotistical. People use the word ego as if it's a bad thing. You actually want people to take a sense of pride,
right,
in what they do, and that's driven by an ego and what you do. But it can't be to the point that you're exclusive allowing others to do it with you. And collaboration, you know, just the fact we call ourselves Weta as opposed to the name of the owners of the company or something like that, is so that everyone feels like they're working underneath a banner that is almost a collective and singular banner that's almost faceless as well. That, you know, it's a co-op of people working together. And the fact that we've got people with the longevity of service here, as you were mentioning, I guess speaks to the fact that people enjoy that. They enjoy not specializing. They enjoy being entirely collaborative, even to the point that a sculpture, I don't know if this is necessarily the one that we did it with, but we will have sculptures that we will hand from artist to artist. Someone will work on it for 3 weeks, and then it will be passed on to another sculptor who may work on it for a bit of time and so on, so that the collective is adding something richer to it than just a single individual.
Wow.
And, you know, I imagine that's a fairly unusual thing in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, what it lends itself to as we walk around is the understanding that Weta is about so much more than just film, or telling stories on film and television, that you guys are into architecture and museum exhibit design. It's storytelling in every possible place you could find it.
Yeah, the term I use, and it might be a little bit clumsy, but Weta services the world's creative industries because we're an artisan studio. We're not filmmakers. We don't make movies. Peter Jackson makes the movies we work on. James Cameron does, Andrew Adamson does, et cetera, et cetera. we're contributors to them, and we love to be an integral part of them. And on something like Ghost in the Shell, you find yourself being an incredibly integral part, and others you may be just a passing moment in the making of the film. But what we're trying to be is an artisan studio servicing the creative industries of the world. What is the prerequisite for us accepting a job, first and foremost, is will it deliver creative enjoyment and worth to us as a group? That's before profitability, that's before kudos, whether we get a credit, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll take on projects that are so richly creatively rewarding, but no one may even know that we work on them. Some of the private commissions that we do for people around the world, for private individuals, are some of the most exciting work, but no one knows that we do that work.
I remember when I first got to Industrial Light and Magic in the late 90s, and it upped my resume so that people started just giving me work without having to see my portfolio, and that was great. But I also, it was very useful because as a model maker in film, it's a boom and bust business, as you know. And as a freelancer, you're always thinking, what's next, what's next, what's next? So I would do toy prototyping, and I would do mechanical problem solving. And
it's exactly the same thing.
This is the thing. Can you talk a little bit about the difficulties of bringing in work for this large group of people and keeping them going?
Yeah, well, as everyone listening to this can appreciate, we're the last model making workshop. Arguably, there may be some in the South Island of New Zealand, and maybe there's some people in the lower part of South Africa, or there may be more south than us, but we're a long way from the epicenter of the world, and especially the world's film industry. And keeping our team busy is an incredible challenge, and we do fall quiet for periods of time, but we are focused. Tanya and myself made a decision a very, very long time ago that our primary calling in our business was to retain our core staff. And that's a core staff of about 150 to 180 people, so it's a lot of people. Right now we've got 320 people on the workshop floor and in the company here just at Weta Workshop. But our core staff we want to retain, and we want to retain them on full wage, whether we've got work or not got work. So that requires a process of making sure that you look after them well enough, you facilitate the workflow successfully enough, and you try and keep consistency of work. Because another thing that a skilled creative artisan doesn't want to be doing is being paid for doing nothing as well. Mm-hmm. So you have to generate creative ideas that give them worthy work that you can then commercialize. And a lot of our tourism offering, our traveling art exhibitions, our publishing arm, to some degree even our collectibles business, has been born out of that aspiration. Keep people in worthy work when you have no work, and then figure out a way for that work to make the money that keeps you going as a company.
And that doesn't just benefit the people that are working for you. Johnny Fraser Allen told us the story of years ago there being some downtime, and you keeping him on the books to learn sculpting during the downtime, and he has become the most amazing sculptor. You fomented that by providing him the space and time and money to do that.
Well, a fundamental is that you're only as good as your staff. I worry sometimes that maybe business owners don't stop to understand that. They think they're only as good as their own self-intelligence and drive and entrepreneurialism and cash in the bank and so on. Those things are important, but nowhere near as important, because you're just one individual. The power in a skilled group of artisans is extraordinary. So the relative inexpensive cost of hosting someone in the workshop and allowing them to learn from the people around them in a new craft, to what it gains in the future. For now, that person may leave, and someone listening to this who may be of the previous school of thought may go, well, see there, you got caught out, they left. But you can't think about just your own company, of course. You've got to think about the community of art, and you've got to think about the world of art. There are far too few artisans. There's far too few artisans in the world, and it's critical that You know, I talked to you a little while ago about the critical importance of tactility in our world. When a world is interfacing with the world through glass interface computer screens, tactility, the touch, the sense of squishiness through your fingers, of dirt under your toes, of stepping off the tarmac roads and concrete pavements of the urban centres of the world, and allowing the people of the world to touch the, have connectivity with the earth. That stuff's actually important. It all starts with craftsmanship.
So. You mentioned there are 11 departments here, and it didn't start out that way, and some of that necessity comes from the technology that's come in, you know, the sculpting, just types of sculpting and digital sculpting. So how do you keep apprised of what's new in terms of technology? Yeah.
Well, that comes down to, you know the answer to that, because you live it and breathe it, you specifically, Norman, probably more than almost anyone that's in the public arena in the world, and that's just fascination, just a deep fascination. I have an unquenchable fascination for what is happening, and I want to be part of it, I want to have part of it. Now, if you can't afford it, and often is the case, we can't afford it, we can't go and buy the latest piece of technology, although I'm proud to, one of the things I'm proud of is that maybe a staff member way back in the past could catch me out on the statement, but I believe that Tanya and I have never turned down a request for a piece of equipment or technology because it enables.
Yeah.
It may be expensive, but often the cost can't be met by going and buying it pre-packaged. So we build it. The great fortune of our company is that we have incredibly innovative people, and you see this every day that you walk around here. And should we need a specific piece of equipment and we can't buy it, we'll build it. Because in the building of it, we enable new technology in the workshop, and we advance ourselves that little bit more, that little bit more.
Well, you seem so fearless about the, you know, there are some shops I know in Los Angeles where everyone builds everything by hand and it's hand sculpted. And you guys are doing that, but you're also using the latest scanning equipment, the latest photogrammetry, the latest 3D printing, rapid prototyping techniques. I saw the titanium-sintered fingers on the armor of a robot yesterday that I had never, you know, a level of precision and tightness to an actor that was impossible 5 years ago.
Correct.
It's really great how fearless you guys are.
Yeah, what we want to never do is the audience do not want to see yesterday tomorrow.
Yeah.
They always want to see something new, and the level of, it's a funny word, sophistication, because sophistication doesn't mean high-tech manufacturing. It's
right.
More about a mindset, the way you think differently. But there is a reality that some things just cannot be created physically to the degree that your client or you aspire to achieve.
Yeah, yeah.
And that requires technology. A very quick and good example, when we started the Gallipoli exhibition, we couldn't find a 3D printer that would print clear material. There may have been in the world, but flies have a very specific clear wing.
Yeah.
So 8 months out from the deadline, we started designing and building a 3D printer to print the wings. 7 months out from the deadline, it worked. And in the last month, we'd already printed non-translucent wings in case we didn't pull it off. But the technology was designed and built to achieve the results we really, really wanted.
Wow.
And that's very much the mindset that goes into these things.
We visited the scale of our war this morning.
Oh, did you?
Walked through.
Oh, yeah.
It, Papa.
That's great. I'm pleased about that.
It's overwhelming in every possible way. And I'll even add, in addition to the ways in which it's purposefully overwhelming, I'm overwhelmed by every tiny detail that you guys had to scale up, from the coarseness of the fabric and the canvas and the leather to the buttons to the scabs on the and the healed scabs on the arms and the skin of the soldiers.
I'm very glad that you acknowledge the fabric, and I wouldn't expect anything less of you, of course, because most people look at the figures and they enjoy the hyperrealism of the flesh and the hair punching and the corneal bulges on the eyes and the cracking of the lips, etc., the broken fingernails. But that was challenging, of course, but nothing compared to the challenge that our costume department went about. The brief I gave Alistair, our head of costume, was, should a world expert on military costuming from the First World War see these figures, they would never question that they weren't exact one-to-one scale uniforms from the original First World War. So that's a gauntlet you throw down. And of course, Anne Alistair, as any of our team leaders, will pick that up and guarantee. So the trying to match stitch for stitch, the authorized military stitch count,
the
denier of the wool that was used to weave the fabric at the time that had to be blown up to enough time. There's no end of stories that I could
not just
share.
But scaled up. Yeah. It's not just cutting a larger swath of fabric.
No, it's not. Scaling up is, we learned it so clearly on Lord of the Rings when we did The Hobbits, because of course Gandalf, the large scale Gandalf, could not just be put in the same fabric. He couldn't be dressed, his hair couldn't be the same thickness as human hair. It had to be 1.48 times larger. The same with these guys, because it's 2.5 times larger. That's why we use yak hair, because yak hair has a larger denier, the thickness of the hair, than normal hair. So all those things are going to be thought about.
When one of the things I do when I see things that I'm encountering for the first time is I often walk through in my head its manufacturing process. I've been doing this for decades.
Yeah.
Sit in a room and just think about how the ceiling tiles were made.
Yes,
and the
light
bulbs.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
And I was looking at those exhibits at Te Papa and just thinking of the lists of, you know, how many dozens of different kinds of fabrics, how many buttons, how many badges, and all the little bits of militaria, and not just militaria, but the detritus of its being used and muddied and bloodied and damaged. I started picturing these lists, and I couldn't conceive of how many places you guys were looking to achieve what ends up being a completely seamless experience.
Well, it's accurate to the hair follicles on the fly's legs. That's the depth of accuracy. So a seam at an accurate level is a fairly easy thing to achieve when you're trying to get accuracy on the fly's legs, hair follicles. It's hard to express to people, but maybe it would be like you guys getting a phone call and saying, could you please do an exhibition about the War of Independence,
right,
or Iwo Jima or Pearl Harbor. This war is a seminal campaign in New Zealand's history. It transformed New Zealand, arguably from a colony of England to a nation in its own right, because of the reaction to the British rule at the time that caused the Anzac forces to be to end up in such a difficult place. And the subject matter of Gallipoli is such a critical and important subject matter here. So I've been bold enough to say, even though Lord of the Rings is a pivotal moment in my career, that this exhibition is the seminal thing thus far in my life that I've had the opportunity to do. And the fact that we were given the chance to oversee it, and because normally we work for a client,
right,
although
right.
we had a client in Te Papa, they allowed us to be our own clients and conceive of an idea, work with them, work with Ben Barad, the designer at Te Papa, and make the exhibition as we saw fit. And that was a very gracious client to allow you to do that.
Do you think that New Zealand itself, being a small country, 4 million people, do you think there's something about New Zealand that makes Weta possible?
Undoubtedly. This is something I can even lecture, give a lecture on. It's hard to actually give you a quick bite on it, but as people may be able to cross-reference to other interviews that have been done with me on this subject, the way I put it, if you're growing up in New Zealand as a child and you have fantasies in your head and you can't buy it blister-packed from the corner store, you're going to invent it with your hands, or you're going to go without that fantasy. And of course, if you're living at the last island before the South Pole, away from the heart of, in the early years, England, multiple month ship, sailing ship journey, you're not going to buy a piece of equipment that's going to break down and then you've got to wait for spare parts, or you're not going to buy the piece of equipment at all. You're going to build it with your own hands.
Right.
You know, there is a lovely metaphor of that, which I'll mention. The Wright brothers undoubtedly pioneered powered flight in the world, and they are worthy of the celebration of it. But there is an argument that maybe a month before, maybe a month after, a New Zealand person took to the air. It is almost irrelevant whether he flew before or after. The fact that he actually was who he was, living where he was, and thought to build an aeroplane. Farmer's son wakes up one day, decides to build a plane, and over the next few months does, and then arguably is successful, and invents things like wing warping, which is still used today, invents ways to build a plane. They're as innovative as the Wright brothers. The story is about the fact that he had the innovative aspiration to do it in isolation. And that is the source of our very being in the workshop. For a very long time, we had a large proportion of our staff from south of Christchurch. There's 4 million people in New Zealand at the moment. There were 3 million at the time that that statistic was correct, of which 1.5 million live in Auckland, another 1 million in the rest of the country, and 1 million in the whole of the South Island. So maybe only 500,000 south of Christchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And a large proportion of our company came from south of Christchurch because it's coming from the heartland of farmer-based innovation.
Wow.
of just muck in and get it done. There's a saying in New Zealand, she'll be right, right? She'll be right because you'll just fix it with your own two hands. You'll notice that when you enter our company downstairs, there's a model of a Weta. The Weta is made out of number 8 fencing wire. It's specifically made out of number 8 fencing wire because in New Zealand, there's a saying, if you can't buy a part or if you can't get it fixed, fix it with number 8 fencing wire. It's what you twist the tractor together with, you hold the gate up with, you repair your car with, you shove it in for an aerial, you know, even if your child needs a tourniquet, you'll probably use a piece of number 8 fencing. Anyway, the point being that it's that mentality, and that is, it's certainly what has allowed me, because I've done no training in what I do in the workshop. I did train in graphic design, but I don't use that for what I do here. I use everything that I learned on the farm growing up before I got to my training in the workshop, and that's what most people bring to their careers.
If you didn't have to run the company, which of the 11 departments, where would you spend your time?
That's really tricky, Norman. I think about that myself sometimes because I'm really scattergun. You mentioned at the beginning of this interview, or Norman said, you've got 11 departments. It wasn't always like that. I understand what you were actually angling at. You were trying to draw in the other new technology departments. But from the day that my wife and I started our company, we were firing in every possible direction we could. Prosthetics, model making, creatures, puppets, and everything else in between. I think miniatures because I love the interaction with the actors, which is what prosthetics give you. I love animatronics because it brings life to inanimate objects. But miniatures are the opportunity to build the architecturally impossible and realize places that you can never go on your own planet. And there's something super special about that.
Yeah.
You know, I am deeply envious of the people working on Thunderbirds because they get to build those miniatures every day.
Yeah.
And imagine that as a glorious existence for those few short years. So, yeah.
And we're surrounded by, you know, essentially miniature characters and collectibles, and it allows people to have a piece of that.
Yeah, this is, this is a very special part of my career, as my office can contest to. You've both seen my office. I am a huge collector of garage kits. I've been collecting them my whole professional life. I love making them. I love putting them on the shelf. At the end of the day, if some were to see them, they're just trinkets. They're silly trinkets. To me, they're a captured moment of dynamic sculpture. You know, what would you collect otherwise? You'd have to be wealthy enough to collect marble statuary or beautiful bronzes. But the garage kit industry offers a way for young people doing beautiful sculpture to distribute their art. And a small number of people in the world, like me, like you guys, collect that art. Well, when we got the opportunity, I wanted to continue that on. And our film work we enjoy and we're very proud of, and we can pour immense artistry into our film work. But these sculptures really offer our creative staff the chance to realize something so special, so intrinsic to who they are, and then share it with the world. And that's a great thing to be doing.
It's why when we're at Comic-Con at your booth, it's not just the movie work, it's also some of the work that your artists have been doing independently. Their passion projects are
Their passion projects are equally as phenomenal as any commercial project. And the Johnny Fraser Allens and the Javiers and the Max Pates and the list is endless. Everyone's got their own little thing that they're doing. Gary Hunt's gaming figures and Jamie Bess Warwick's zoological creatures. I mean, it's just so rich what people do outside of the hours that they work here.
You talked about tactility, and we've both walked through many different model shops and special effects studios, and there's always models and things that were built by the studio on the walls, but this is the one place where not only do I want to touch absolutely everything, it seems like that's encouraged.
Yes, it certainly is encouraged. We've even got racks where we haven't screwed the weapon to the wall, where we want people to take the sword off the wall. And the stuff on our walls, you may notice that almost all of the art on the walls, especially in the design studio, is not our art. Every time I go to places like Comic-Con, I try and buy one or two special pieces of art, and I hang it on the wall of our workshop because I want other people's art from around the world to be inspirational to us. It's great to hang your own art, but boy, it's really inspiring to have other people's art.
You talk about going to Comic-Con to buy somebody else's art, and you told us a couple stories this weekend. One of the things that I find really impressive is that when you're traveling, and you travel a tremendous amount, you are not just traveling to a place to go do a job or meet a client or deliver something, but you are also taking the opportunity while you're in that part of the world to go look at other people's studios, other shops. We've met people here who you just reached out and said, I'm in town, I like your work, I'd like to come by your studio, and that developed a relationship. You're always looking for the thing you haven't heard about that you don't know about.
Always, yeah. I think that's a result of living in a place such as Wellington, New Zealand. This is a beautiful place to live. I wouldn't live anywhere else. But it is not rich with, we have a rich indigenous culture, but it is not rich with a creative culture of the things I love. Mm-hmm. Public art sculpture, figurative work, collectibles, pop culture, so on. So I have, as my assistant Ree could contest to, because it drives her mad at times, because we're supposed to be in a meeting, but there is another texture to photograph. Oh, boy, there's another amazing thing to see. And I just love cataloguing the world, and because I love observing the world. And I'd love to, what I always hope I can do with when I talk to young people or try and inspire people here is remind them that to observe the world is the greatest gift you can give yourself for free. You know, you may want to go and buy a material item from the store, but in walking to the store, you gain far more material items through observation than mm-hmm. ever you'll get out of the thing you bought. And I worry that some people forget that sometimes.
Yeah, they definitely do.
Sorry, guys, I took all time.
Oh,
That is a wonderful place to stop. Thank you so much, Richard.
That was my assistant calling.
Hi, Reed. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And thanks so much for opening your doors to us. We love coming here. We will keep
Come back as frequently as you possibly can and start thinking about bringing your wife with you doesn't feel envious.
Absolutely. Yeah,
get her up in a plane and riding trains and automobiles.
Cheers.
As always, thank you.